All lines are now bridged.
Great. Thank you very much, and good morning, everyone. I'm Mike Berry with ONC, and we really appreciate you joining us today for the Public Health Data Systems Task Force. I am going to get started with roll call, and so when I call your name, please indicate you are here. And let's begin with our co-chairs. Carolyn Peterson.
Good morning.
Janet Hamilton.
Good morning.
Danielle Brooks.
Good morning.
Denise Chrysler.
Good morning.
Jim Daniel. Steve Eichner.
Good morning.
Ngozi Ezike. Claudia Grossman.
Good morning.
Steve Hendricks. Jim Jurgis.
Here.
John Kansky.
I'm here.
Bryant Karras.
Good morning.
Stephen Lane.
Good morning.
Nell Lapras.
I'm here.
Leslie Leonard. Denise Love. Arian Malik.
Good morning.
Clem McDonald. Aaron Meary. Larry Moll.
Good morning, sir.
Abby Sears, I believe she is away and will be rejoining us at another time. Cheryl Turney. All right. Thank you, everybody. And I'd now like to turn it over to our co-chairs, Carolyn and Janet. Thank you.
Good morning. Thanks, Mike, for all your help. And good morning and welcome to everyone. I know we are coming towards the home stretch in our task force work, and I really appreciate everyone's hanging in and following along with the homework and the discussions. We have some discussion today of some of our draft recommendations and also some time talking about the last survey questions. And then we anticipate reaching out to you to work on specific recommendations. But I will leave that discussion for our ONC team leads, Brett and Brenda. I'll now pass the mic to Janet for her comments.
Great. Thank you so much, Carolyn. Just really looking forward to the discussion today. I'm sorry I had to miss our last meeting. We were having a large conference, and I would just say, boy, is the work of this group going to be so meaningful for our public health membership. And so just really want to thank people for your time, as well as when we do get into some of the next steps and the looking at some of the homework and other things, I really would encourage people to think about which items maybe they want to volunteer for. We are in this home stretch, and really just look forward to all of your participation during these calls, but also to helping us really get the language of our recommendations articulated in the most useful and productive way. So thank you all so much.
And with that, I will ask Asel if you could pull up the Google Doc with the draft recommendations in it. And Janet is going to lead a discussion on the funding recommendations. And that would be of interest to everyone. For those on the phone, we're just working through the technical aspects of bringing up the document on the screen. We will start the discussion momentarily.
Oh, and Carolyn, I'm on. This is Cheryl Turney. Sorry for being late.
Thanks, Cheryl. I'm glad you were able to come today.
Hi, this is Leslie Leonard. I'm also on.
Thanks, Les.
And Jim Daniel as well.
Hi, Jim.
Hi there, this is Katie. Can everyone see this Google Doc now?
It's still
pulling up. Great.
Yes.
Thanks so much, Katie. This is Janet. I don't know if you're able to make it a little bigger for folks too. Maybe zoom in a little bit. And while you're working on that, that looks much better on my end. Thank you. So the first section for discussion for the group that we thought we would like to focus in on is really this funding piece. And I think if you can think all the way back to some of our early meetings, when we were really working on soliciting opening comments and even the hearing that was held outside of this specific work group. But one of the major things that came up was really the funding for public health to support, data efforts. And so we really wanted to ensure that we had a time for this group to look at that and to look at the language that we have proposed here. And I would just say, I think there was broad consensus that public health had never been funded at the level that it needed to be funded to do the work that it needs to do to really be a population-focused activity that is receiving, collecting, aggregating, and turning disparate bits of data into information and ensuring that useful, meaningful information is also provided to the public, and being able to do that at a true population scale, in addition to technical infrastructure, needs resources to do that. So this first part of the discussion is around funding, and there are some recommendations that you will see here on the screen. And I think what I will do in the interest of time is for folks on the phone to go over these recommendations, these four that are on the screen, and then ask folks to provide input on the recommendations themselves. So the first one being, Congress should appropriate to CDC robust annual sustained funding to support development and maintenance of public health data systems capable of supporting routine and large-scale responses. The second one, CDC should develop plans for cross-program funding of technology investments that support interoperability across public health systems. The fourth one, CDC should allocate funding for capability development, for example, contact tracing, that serves multiple public health goals separately from disease-specific funding. There should be a minimum functional standard for public health that focuses not just on interoperability and standards development, but also ideally addresses infrastructure expectations to improve scalability. And the fourth one being ONC, CDC, and CMS should invest in education campaigns to enhance knowledge and identify opportunities to incentivize. So with that, we would love to take comments, and if folks can raise their hand and offer either specific or more broad comments, I would really ask people to think about if there are gaps. We would really want to address and close any gaps that you see in this, and to be thinking about this in a really holistic approach, and ask folks to also reflect on the language. Is this language adequate enough to represent some of our other discussions around the need for the intersection between healthcare and public health? And also, is the language maybe well enough fleshed out that supports the public health system and the reflection of the fact that public health is a state, local, tribal, territorial, as well as federal function. And so maybe I'll just stop there with some of my opening comments, and it looks like we have quite a few hands raised.
And Janet, this is Danielle. I'm having technology challenges, but love to comment in a polite order. Is there a way for me to raise my hand via the phone, or would you just like to wait to the ending of comments? I just want to make sure that I'm respecting the process.
Thanks so much, Danielle. And I say myself and Carolyn, will try to remember to ask for folks just on the phone. But why don't you go ahead now, and then we can look at the hands raised.
Sure. Yeah, I did not mean to jump the line.
That's quite all right. I feel like we often leave the phone to the end. So let's go ahead and see what your thoughts are. And then on my screen, I'll just say I don't see the document anymore. And so I do hope we can bring that back up. Okay, great. Thank you.
Sure. I'll keep my comments quick. One of the things, just observing the overall funding, I applaud the recognition and needing stronger and more consistent funding. I think from an equity standpoint, I don't want the standard to be written with the assumption that funding is equitable right now. And there may need to be some kind of equity considerations in this funding model, meaning making sure that areas that are traditionally underfunded do receive proportional funding to be able to participate in this infrastructure, as there may be greater funding needs compared to a larger system. So I just wanted to raise that to make sure that you're continuing to make that equity focus. Thank you.
Okay, great. And maybe a way to represent that too is also across jurisdictions and ensure that we're looking at that as a way to ensure that those equity considerations are represented. Okay, let's go to Denise.
Yes, thank you. Denise Love?
Yes,
are you
please.
Going to Denise Love? Okay, thank you. On these recommendations, they are broad and they cover, you know, a lot of ground. I think it also leaves some interpretation to the eyes of the beholder, but I wanted to, because I'm working with the National Committee on Vital and Health Statistics right now on an ICD-11 work group, we all agree that part of the public health infrastructure truly is the administrative data systems and ICD-11. So would this be broad enough to cover an evaluation of ICD-11 for sufficiency for the healthcare and the public health infrastructure? And one more thing. On the infrastructure on the third one, for the infrastructure to improve, the other component of that is improved scalability and infrastructure. I'm assuming that also includes social determinants of health, the ability to capture that in the data systems and scale those. So I'm assuming it's in there. I just wanted to underscore that's an important component to the NCDHS and to the healthcare system, but also the administrative data systems for interoperability as we start looking at the WHO's adoption of ICD-11 and how that fits with the infrastructure.
Sorry, let's go to Les Leonard.
Hi, yes, thank you. These are wonderful recommendations. I think the first thing I would add, though, is to say that it's the should appropriate funds. I would like to, as I put in the comments, to say that the appropriation should be to strengthen public health data infrastructure,
through CDC,
but as obviously
but
would be
obviously
directed
would be
to
directed to.
Hey, Les, I'm getting
a little bit of background.
Okay, is that better?
I I think so. It sounds like maybe someone is not on mute also. So I think we heard you say support specifically for data and also through CDC. So if you want to just pick up that thought
CDC
again.
CDC instead of to CDC, because much of the funding has to come to state and local governments, right, with the requirements for this. So recommendation one. Recommendation two, after across public health platforms the support interoperability across public health platforms and with the clinical care system.
Okay, I think those are great suggestions. Thanks for bringing those out. And yes, recognition that public health, when we say the public health system, that includes state, tribal, territorial, local, as well as the federal levels, and probably be good to specify that. Thank you very much. Okay, let's go to Bryant next.
Thank you. I totally agree with them I would hope it goes without saying that when there's an allocation to CDC that's a passageway for providing those funds to state, local, territorial, tribal partners, but I think it's worth it may being explicit in these recommendations every time so that my comment is I'm wondering that the second recommendation I feel like needs either expansion or an additional one inserted between it and the next one. There needs to be funding requests and investment in an allocation in public health informatics research, evaluation, platform enhancement, and innovation, not just in the standards and interoperability, but in the capacities and capabilities themselves before we're able to really state what those minimum standards are that are mentioned in the next recommendation. I think that might be a investment that is not just in CDC, but potentially could be in ONC, CDC, NIH, NLM, and CMS. I think there's a lot of different HHS agencies that could invest in advancing these public health capabilities on both sides of the partnership. I'll work on some specific language and put it into the document.
Great, thanks, Brian. And if you want to put something in the chat too, that would be great. I think one thing I heard is not just evaluation, but ongoing evaluation to support
innovation.
The development. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, it needs to be, it's a continuous process. You're absolutely right. It's not a one and done. To stay current, we need to keep that investment. And I believe that it should be, NIH and NLM have a robust extramural program to do that kind of work. And I think we need to get whether CDC adopts those kinds of approaches to invest in our academic partners in respective states and jurisdictions, or we leverage pre-existing mechanisms through NIH and NLM.
Okay, great. Let's go on to Arian Malik.
Hey, thank you.
Sorry, Arian, let me just double check if Denise, your hand is still raised or if it's a new one. And if you want to just look at that while Arian makes his comment,
no,
that would be great.
Okay.
Denise Love is fine.
Thank you. So, first of all, I wholeheartedly agree with all of these comments. In the first recommendation, I think this is implied, but it might be appropriate to state consistent, robust annual sustained and consistent funding. One of the things that we've heard is that the variability in funding creates mission issues for states and localities because they can't assume continued consistent funding. The second comment is a structural one that the task force and sort of encourage the task force chairs to think about. As an advisory committee, we're structurally an advisory committee that makes recommendations to the national coordinator. We've gone off that mission, and I encourage us to go off that mission at times. I've tried to structure recommendations wherever possible as recommendations to the national coordinator to coordinate with blah, 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 blah. There are some cases where it's appropriate for us to sort of pull off that that hat and use our public role to make recommendations directly to CDC, or in this case, I think there are potentially recommendations to the administration as a whole relative to CDC funding as part of the overall budget request and recommendations to Congress. So I think we should be thoughtful about the structure that we're making those recommendations in and just be understand that, you know, we're structurally making recommendations to the coordinator, but we might think about a separate transmittal or a separate letter that we send to, for example, the majority and minority leaders and the speaker of each chamber relative to recommendations to Congress that aren't structurally part of the HITACH mission, but are important enough recommendations that we should be making them separately. So let's be thoughtful about the structure that we make recommendations in, and also be thoughtful about times when we deliberately work around that structure. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. That is excellent comment. Thank you, and well articulated. Okay, let's go to Denise Chrysler, and apologies, Denise. Two Denises on the line, both of which I have worked with before and have amazing contributions. So please go ahead, Denise.
That's okay. I am accustomed to this. just a couple questions. I assume this language implies workforce development, and it's not just limited to technology. Just a question, should that be explicit? The other question is whether we should be explicit here, possibly we are elsewhere, of the role of funding mechanisms to require compliance with minimum standards to ensure interoperability.
Thanks, Denise. I think something explicit to mention, this is the technology, but also workforce, and that the data workforce is part of what we view as the infrastructure. I think that's a great suggestion. I don't know if you have any specific language there, but absolutely agree with that. And then your other comment, I think, is certainly wise for us to take into account, too.
And the reason for the second comment is because variability of state law gets in the way so much, but it's a double-edged sword because there's just not a political environment in certain states to adopt what might be overall in the national interest, but it's the chief way or a key way to reduce variability among states or other jurisdictions.
Excellent comments, Denise. Thank you. Okay, Jim Juris. Thank you so much, Denise,
sorry,
for those great comments. Yeah, go ahead, Jim. Jim Juris.
Yeah, I just wanted to support the second one, the AND clinical systems, that we should be more explicit about aligning with the National Interoperability Plan, TEFCA, et cetera. Because one of the concerns is that if the public health systems aren't overt in aligning with that, then we'll be right back where we started.
Okay, great. Thank you. Steve Eichner.
Good morning. Thank you. I did submit some written comments on the draft earlier today, but I want to highlight a couple of pieces in funding right now. First, looking at the existing recommendation regarding funding, cross-program funding of interoperability, it really needs to be supporting funding on information systems that can support multiple program areas and include interoperability between systems. One of the challenges that we faced in the past is that we get siloed funding that can only be implemented for a particular program in a separate silo, and public health needs the flexibility to combine that funding so that we can implement a single system to support multiple programs, such as implementing a single sign-on system that can support ECR and ELR. I mean, a poor example, but it's a reasonable one. Because that way we can leverage our investments better and have a reduced number of systems to maintain, and that creates substantial efficiencies. Interoperability still needs to be there, but if we can get the data all or appropriate data and systems to appropriately reuse modular technology, we'll be a lot better off. Secondly, there needs to be adequate funding provided to support public health staff in participating more heavily in standards development activities, in real-world testing of data standards and exchange, in planning activities and feedback activities, such as these task force activities, as well as some strategic planning within the public health community where we can share information and thoughts to help inform future strategies. Right now, so many of us are wearing so many multiple hats that there's limited time to focus on some important activities, such as planning for the future, to help us avoid some of the pitfalls we've experienced in the past. We're constantly playing catch-up with additional funding. We can get ahead of the ball and can remain ahead of the ball, and that will benefit everybody.
Okay, great.
Thank you,
Steve. Let's see, we have not heard yet from Jim Daniel, so let's go ahead to Jim Daniel, and then Bryant, you'll have the last comment, and then I think we can move on.
Thanks, Janet. I just wanted to really emphasize Denise Chrysler's comment about how the cross-funding is really important for public health to build their systems appropriately, but really making sure that states are meeting interoperability standards at a national level is critical. And I think the recommendation should really focus on tying the funding as opposed to a specific program like has been done in the past, but really trying to tie that funding to meeting those interoperability standards. I know that's a real challenge with CDC cooperative agreements, and that's a policy issue I think that needs to be addressed to make sure that the funding is tied to meeting that deliverable of having these systems be interoperable and both with each other and with the clinical systems.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jim. Really important comments there. Okay, Bryant.
Hi there. So I wanted to, there was a comment earlier about incentivizing public health to utilize mechanisms and standards and leveraging connections between clinical providers, HIE, and public health. And I think that one of the things that is a challenge is that looking within a program or a silo or a specific team responding or implementing a system, it may seem more advantageous, either time and development or financially, to do one-off solutions rather than leveraging a shared infrastructure or health information exchange pathways. And I think that we need to figure out how to help this response, to recognize the sustainability benefit of building upon infrastructures and investing in reusable architectures rather than jumping to a quick solution. And that's going to take careful investment in ways that that raises all states' capacity rather than admitting that some states don't have that infrastructure in place and are going to need to be invested in so that they can in turn leverage it. It's a long-term investment. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thanks so much. We're going to go ahead and move on now to the policy recommendations. And I don't know if you're able to. Yeah, that's great. If you could try to fit them all on the screen, that would be really helpful. Sorry, I saw them for a minute. So we're just looking for that section. Okay, great. And I'm going to do a similar approach here and go through the different recommendations also for I apologize. I did not check to see if we had any other phone comments on the last section. Were there any other folks who were only on the phone who wanted to make a comment on the funding piece? Okay, great. So let's go ahead now on the policy section, and we will take comments on all of them, but happy if folks will point out specific ones as well as any specific language, and again, to look for gaps in what we have listed here. So I will read them off for folks who are only on the phone. So the first recommendation being ONC and CDC should work with OCR to develop and release best practices and guidance for meeting with HIPAA minimum necessary standard for reporting to public health authorities. Such guidance should be aligned with TEFCA to allow national networks and HIEs to serve as public health intermediaries. The second recommendation, CDC and ONC should work to harmonize reporting requirements, roles, and capabilities across jurisdictions and states, including data elements, timelines for submission, and communication with providers. The third, CDC and ONC should explore policy levers to require state use of federal systems when states are receiving federal funds. The fourth, CDC and ONC should explore creation of an ongoing public health task force or work group with adequate authority to address topics out of scope for high-tech public health data systems task force to ensure preparedness for future high-consequence public health emergencies. And the last one, CDC-ONC should elevate federal policy barriers that prevent HIEs from participating in public health reporting and should analyze and publish guidance aimed at educating states about state-level policy barriers that prevent HIEs from participating in public health reporting. And with that, I will ask for folks to think of gaps that are missing here, as well as other tweaks to those existing language. So we will start with Stephen Lane. Stephen, please go ahead.
Thanks. Yeah, on the first recommendation, I keep trying to stress this. This is not just about reporting. That we're also looking at case investigation, care coordination, and ongoing bidirectional data exchange between public health and providers. So the clarification we need on minimum necessary is really primarily not on reporting, because you report what you need to report, but also on responding to public health queries for additional information in the case of case investigation, and for the ongoing exchange of data in the case of care coordination and management. Again, we should
Excellent.
Be able to trust public health to ask for the appropriate data and not have to go through machinations to assure that that is, you know, meets the minimum necessary definition, or needing to reassure providers who may get stuck on that point of art.
Thank you very much for adding that. I agree. Those were some great suggestions. Steve Eichner. Great. Thanks so much for those excellent suggestions. Steve Eichner.
To the drafted recommendations. The first one, looking at the recommendation about additional guidance regarding minimum necessary standards in HIPAA for HIEs, the guidance needs to specifically address what use of the data passing through an HIE that's been reported for public health may also be utilized, e.g., may the HIE use it for other purposes, or is it to be strictly transmitted to public health and not used for other purposes. Looking at the second recommendation, addressing harmonization of reporting requirements, whatever recommendations are developed in that space must recognize that states may have different, very specific requirements for reporting data under state law and local control, and whatever the approach that's adopted is needs to be able to support both national and local standards and investments. Looking at the recommendation regarding task forces, rather than starting immediately to suggest the creation of a new task force, I think there needs to be an analysis of existing resources and existing forums, and either leverage an existing forum appropriately, or if necessary, create a new forum to achieve the goals of informing HITECH in different spaces. There are already a number of different work groups and task forces working on different aspects, and rather than creating a new resource, it may very well be possible to leverage or repurpose an existing framework. That will help reduce redundancy by creating yet another entity with potentially overlapping responsibilities. As I mentioned earlier, public health staff are already overburdened in many cases with extra work. While we're very interested in continuing to participate in these discussions, we may not have the resources to spend a lot of additional time in meetings. So that's something that needs to be a consideration. Finally, looking at policy barriers for HIEs, I think there needs to be a recommendation, rather than just looking at
what prevents HIEs from participating and supporting public health reporting? What are the policy barriers that impact reporting? Because there may be things that don't just limit or prevent participation, but there may also be improvements that can be made that enhance things that are working, but not as well as they could be. So I would hate to set our boundaries on only, oh, if it doesn't work, here's what you need to do. We should also keep our eyes open for what can be improved as well. Otherwise, we're not making a whole lot of forward progress across the country. Thanks so much.
Great. Thank you so much, Steve. Let's go to Denise Kreisler. Denise.
Hi. Steve and Brian and a number of other people keep appropriately mentioning the use of existing infrastructure structures instead of always, you know, creating new or duplicate structures. In my work with cross-jurisdictional exchange, and we look at leveraging e-health exchange and using common trust agreements, the obstacle seems to often be there are no use cases, or actually there's, I believe, one use case for electronic lab reporting, and then there is one under development for electronic case reporting, but there's not use cases for public health to really fully utilize this infrastructure that clinical health is using all the time. So don't know quite how that gets incorporated, but it's what I've observed as one of the obstacles.
Yeah, thanks so much, Denise. Really important point. Let's go to Jim Daniel.
Hi, Janet. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can.
Great. Yeah, I just wanted to comment on the recommendation for CDC and ONC should be using policy levers to require state use of federal systems. I think that one might be a little broad in scope, and I think we really need to think about what we're trying to say with that one. You know, coming previously from a state, I know that federally developed systems often don't meet the requirements of what a state is trying to do. They're often more about what is required from the states to send to the CDC. So I think I really have to disagree with that one in the way that it's currently written. We have to make sure that states are able to build out the systems that meet their needs. They're the ones who know what they need and how they need to accomplish that work. You know, putting the requirements in there that we talked about earlier about meeting interoperability standards and tying funding to that, I think are critical, but requiring them to use federally developed systems, I think could really hinder their ability to do their work.
Thanks, Jim. I think that's a really important point, and I think also given what we see in today's world, there is a lot of really good infrastructure that states have in place, particularly for some really core things.
Janet, would just ask if
maybe others have some comments. So go ahead, Steve.
Janet, can I just add quickly onto that one? I'm sorry, I did have a comment on that one earlier, just was the wrong side of the page break. I'm also very concerned about that requirement, in part because of what Jim Daniels was speaking to, but also in part as a part of the effects downstream. In many cases, states are also providing shared technology services in support of our local health departments. And I know that we are running into some challenges in terms of what the technology we are implementing and how that best supports local needs that may go beyond what the state may be focused on in terms of its activities, and working with local health departments to establish appropriate interoperability so that the state is getting what it does need, at the same time supporting local health departments in achieving their specific business needs, which may involve more complex activities with data and services that are occurring at the state level. Same exact problem would happen if the federal government mandated full use of federal systems on states. Or is the federal government prepared to provide full support, not just for state-level activities, but for downstream activities at local jurisdictions as well? That can be a very, very broad array of services and really challenging to implement. I think there needs to be a focus on interoperability with federal systems and encouragement to use shared systems where possible, similar to things that are coming out of CMS, and when you receive an APD award, the ability to make that technology available to other states, the resources available to other states, so that jurisdictions can leverage technology developed by our colleagues, makes a great deal of sense. The federal government establishing key points for data exchange around select business processes also makes sense. So we need to think a little bit beyond a broad brushstroke about a singular statement of we're providing you money, therefore you have to use exactly the system that we specify may actually not be in everybody's best interest and not result in the federal government getting the data that it wants and needs to make informed decision making. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thanks so much, Steve. Let's see. We have another comment from Les Leonard. Les?
Yeah, so again, to go back to that recommendation three, I would suggest modifying that to should explore policy levers to incentivize state use of systems that comply with federal standards for public health data interoperability when receiving federal funds.
Okay, great. Thanks, Les. I think that makes a lot of sense, that it is ensuring that states are able to provide the data and those interoperability requirements. So for federal policy levers to incentivize state use of systems that comply with federal standards for public health data interoperability. I think that's what, or something like that, I believe, is what I heard
that's
as a modification.
Close enough.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Denise Love.
Yes, I have a question on that, though. Not that I disagree, but can't the standards or the content be required when receiving federal funds, even if the system is built out from, you know, state needs? I mean, incentivize is nice, but if they aren't incented to do that, we still don't have standardized content. Maybe I'm reading it wrong.
I was thinking incentives like Medicare and meaningful use that, you know, have a stick and a carrot.
Right, but I see still, you know, the CMS enforcing that, you know, is variable. I have no problem with the comments, but I'm wondering, can't standards be required when receiving federal funds? I mean, is there a way to state that? So that we're all sending the same information.
Most RFAs that are put out to states do have a requirement for adoption of federal standards.
Okay.
At least when I was running informatics at CDC, it was always written in. And that. So it's not the, it's not the, they all meet the standards in name. It's that they, but the implementations are often technically inadequate.
Uh-huh. Okay. I just, as long as that's
so
clear.
That would, there would always be a paragraph that's saying you will comply with, you know, all, you know, whatever.
Okay. All right. Thank you for clarifying.
Okay, great. It looks like we have another comment from Brian. Brian, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I just, it's on the same point. I think that incentivizing is good, and I would throw borrowing from meaningful use and, CMS. I think standards and conditions, not just about the standards, but it's about the appropriate implementation of those standards. Because one can comply with a standard and still provide useless information. So I think we need to take it a level further. And I'd suggest that there might be some policy recommendations around, this is, some of the other recommendations may tease at this, but around providing the resources for public health to agree upon those consistent implementation guides of the standards. And I think that's what we've heard a lot of discussion and on last week's call. We had a lot of a chatter about the minimum or about the optional data elements. And we really need to drive home consistent implementations and implementation guides that allow states to do what they need to do, as well as provide those additional minimums up to the feds. There's kind of a two-tier that needs to come into play. I'd like to see investment similar to what ONC did policy and innovation-wise around meaningful use of investment in standards and interoperability framework, where potential standards were further flushed out, piloted, the kinks worked out, the details, so that a consistent and actually functional implementation guide could come out of the work. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Bryant. I think the development of standards and collaborative development of standards is really key. Okay, let's take the last comment from Les, and then I'm going to turn it over to Carolyn to move us on to the next part of our discussion. Les, go ahead.
This is very important, and I put it in the chat field, but I want to mention it. It's not enough just to have the standards. We need to have a certification body, and I'd like to see that as a policy recommendation, that a certification body for is jointly managed by CDC and ONC be developed to certify public health systems for their compliance with national data standards.
You're here.
Okay, thanks, Les. And I would just add and take the moderator's prerogative that would need to be a well-funded activity. Okay.
And include participation from states. It's not just about ONC and CDC.
Great addition. Thank you. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Carolyn. Carolyn.
Thanks, Janet. We had, in thinking about how best to use our time during the meeting today, we had decided to dedicate some of it to these recommendations, this discussion we've just had, and also to try to briefly go through the questions that were in the homework, the newer questions that were in the homework this week, and try to get some additional feedback and comments on those. ONC, are you able to bring up? There we go. Great, thanks. So I think what I will do, you've all seen these slides in your packet. Considering where we are with time, I'm going to focus our discussions on the first three of the four slides related to this topic of administering medical countermeasures, developing temporary policies and standards of care. And as we have in the past, I'll read these, what's on the slide, and then ask for raised hands and comments from task force members on the phone. So this one relates to distributing a vaccine or medication, and for immunizations, what elements of systems were successful in tracking vaccine allocation and administration to hospitals and providers, and what systems between public health and clinical settings were unsuccessful and may have impeded vaccine distribution and or administration. And then for novel medications and treatments, were we successful in exchanging data between providers and public health on new medical interventions or medications? Where were the gaps? And finally, beyond this high-consequence public health threat, what interoperability might be needed between public health and clinical settings to adapt and adopt rapid implementation of new medical countermeasures? And that could be things like natural disasters or environmental disasters or other such things. Public health task force members, if you raise your hands, please, in Adobe. Let's start with Les Leonard.
First comment is on for the immunizations. On the second point, what systems were not successful and may have impeded vaccine distribution? This emphasizes a previous point I've made, but we have zero ability nationally, you know, or distributed ability to allow public health departments to predict what the future holds 1 or 2 weeks in advance, and to be able to distribute vaccine and or countermeasures based on the predictions of this. So this was, you know, people were using, you know, various public data tools created by private agencies to do prediction, but we need a national infrastructure so that vaccines go where the pandemic is, not just where the people are, and where the politics are. Secondly, I'd like to say that for the medications and treatments, and we've explored this other places in ONC in our discussions in HITECH, but we really lack the ability to run large-scale randomized trials with EHRs that evaluate new medical interventions and medications quickly. That most of the data for this area came out of the UK, and it's not because we didn't have the EHRs. We didn't really have the infrastructure to rapidly deploy pragmatic trials inside of electronic health records.
Thanks, Les. Let's go to Arian Malik, please.
Thank you, sir. Just on Les's last comment, the ISP task force made a set of recommendations about exactly that topic to better able to use deployed EHRs for prospective pragmatic clinical research trials to be able to compare treatments emergently. On vaccine distribution and allocation, I spent a good chunk of time trying to trace down where vaccines were being sent in California to very limited effect. We did not have the ability to evaluate vaccine distribution and administration by channel and be able to compare the effectiveness of channels and understand where which channels were the most successful at getting vaccines into arms. And in many cases, at the federal government level, CDC appeared to have more data access than was publicly available or made available to states.
So CDC was saying, for example, that the pharmacy channel was a more effective channel than the state distribution channel. But if you look at public data that CDC makes available, it's very hard to trace the validity of that statement. It's probably true, but it just underscores that we don't have the transparent means to be able to track vaccine allocations by channel and effectiveness by channel. And then thirdly, you know, we've been to the point of getting allocation where we have case rates. We have over-covered, I think, pretty objectively, the wealthiest zip codes and census tracts in, for example, the Bay Area with vaccine administration, distribution administration, and under-covered the areas where we have the highest rates of or the highest case rates for COVID-19. And we need better tools to be able to track allocation and distribution down to zip and census tract to be able to evaluate not just which channels are most effective at getting vaccines in arms, but also which channels are most effective at getting vaccines in arms where they most need to be. So this is an area where investment in vaccine allocation, tracking, and distribution systems that's prospective for the next pandemic, but also for flu vaccination, for any COVID boosters that are needed, is a useful investment for the future. Thank you.
Thanks, Arian. Stephen Lane?
Just a question first. I spent a lot of time collecting responses from within my organization to respond to the homework questions and got those all submitted. I assume the ONC team and the task force chairs will be reviewing all those responses and that we don't have a need to reiterate those points here. Is that true?
Yes, we do have the feedback, and we are hoping to find ways to direct task force members to incorporate that into the recommendations as you see fit.
Great. Having said that, I'll just highlight a couple of points that might be a little bit redundant with what Les and Aaron have said. One key point that I heard from my organization was we need to fully leverage deployed systems that exist rather than trying to recreate the wheel in our enthusiasm to respond quickly, especially insofar as what we see is that everybody is trying to recreate the wheel and be creative and innovative, and they end up creating a complete mess with disparate requirements and suggestions. The other suggestion that came out is don't change systems in the middle of the process. Better to invest in iterating and improving on existing systems because the costs and delays related to system changes are really difficult to manage. That centralized systems should be used to help to create sort of a hub and spoke model for both reporting and information distribution. But that, again, you should rely on the source systems that are in place for the actual generation and receipt of the data. There's a key need to harmonize both requirements and recommendations from CDC, state, tribal, and territorial entities, and locals, that the variances between those groups were just horrifying to deal with at the provider level. And then also utilizing established distribution channels. When locals, you know, got involved in trying to distribute vaccine or medication or what have you, that was not nearly as efficient as if they had leveraged the established distribution channels for pharmacy and other products that exist out there. And then I just wanted to add that on the prior slide, you made the point about preparing, there it is again, for natural and environmental disasters. I mean, I'll just add a personal commentary that I think COVID was simply a practice run for what we're all going to need to do as we deal with climate change and its consequences. So we should really be thinking about that as we prepare our systems to be more functional and robust.
Thanks, Stephen. Bryant?
Thank you. I think one of the things that I want to point out on the immunization is previously unrecognized need or role in centralizing or interoperating the scheduling of vaccine appointments and the prioritizing or regulating of what risk group gets vaccinated when. We saw, there public health had previously had a mechanism for a central registry of the delivered vaccines and a mechanism for requesting vaccine supplies, but there was no centralized or interoperable way for the public to find the nearest available vaccine appointment for themselves. I think the established systems were all within given silos or within given health systems, and the people needed to go from one to one to one to try to find that last remaining appointment slot. We spent a lot of time scrambling trying to make these systems work interoperably. We had some success in public-private partnerships to come in and try to make advancements, but those standards really need to be advanced. I think there's some that came out of this experience, and those need to be invested in and solidified so that they're in place for the next event, whether it be natural or unnatural. Thank you.
Thanks, Bryant. Jim Daniel?
Yeah, just to build on what Bryant said, that is a very important piece, the scheduling work. I know that U.S. Digital Services has put out some APIs on available vaccine appointments. I really think that needs to be expanded on to include actually being able to APIs to actually schedule the vaccine appointment, not just to have vaccine availability. And there are probably some policy issues in there as well that need to be worked out around who those open appointments are available to. And in the beginning, this is a personal feeling of mine, when large provider organizations got vaccine and were only opening up those appointments to their constituents, I think that is part of what led to a lot of inequity in vaccine distribution. The people that we were really trying to reach out to are often those without primary care providers, and that was a huge block of vaccine appointments that were not available to them. So I think it's both a policy and a technical issue. Opening up those APIs to schedule wherever there are appointments available, but also making sure that those aren't held closely just to certain parts of the population.
Thanks, Jim. Clem, go ahead, please.
Continue with that point. And I want to brag about Indiana, where I got my vaccine. But they did it exactly right. There was like 45 sites in Indianapolis alone. You look on the web, and you could find wherever sites were available. You could pick a choice. There was no barriers. In fact, I know people who weren't even from Indiana came in. If someone wanted a vaccine, they got it. They did start it out with the oldest, which is appropriate given the risk factors and all. But there's a model. They did it just right, and it was smooth as silk. So I recommend people looking at it a little closer if it's not been the same everywhere. I had assumed it was.
Thanks, Clem.
And that was the State Department, the Indiana State Health Department organized the whole thing. But it was all, that was delivered in the hospitals and pharmacies and all different places.
Thank you. Before we turn our discussion to the certified public health IT aspect, I just wanted to check if there are any task force members on the phone who have comments.
No comments. I agree with most of the other comments. Thank you.
Okay. So we have about 10 minutes before public comment, and I think we will spend that on this question related to certified public health IT. And the question here for our discussion is, how can bidirectional data exchange between public health and clinical data sources be leveraged through the Cures Act, CMS interoperability rule, and/or the ONC information blocking rule, or others? What pathways are there to use legislation or rules to create certified public health IT? And I see Steve Eichner has his hand up. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much. This is a really important subject to public health and care providers. I think it's really important that we provide a good definition of what we mean by bidirectional. There are three or four different scenarios. One is just provision of data in a one-way only approach with perhaps a simple acknowledgement that a message has been received. Secondly, there is light bidirectional, if you will, where data may be submitted or provided from healthcare providers to public health, and a error report for that contains protected health information returned to the provider for future action. And then true bidirectional interoperability, where both parties transacting on information will submit information or provide information to each other as simultaneous exchange or near simultaneous exchange. As an example, looking at retrieving a vaccine forecast from an IIS and then providing an update on the vaccine status for the patient back to the IIS. That becomes vitally important because both public health and healthcare providers have some challenges in supplying all data from all systems through this bidirectional exchange. Under state law, many of our systems and programs are not, have different privacy constraints, and they are not offered as HIPAA-covered programs. They do not meet the definition of HIPAA and subsequently cannot transact exchange based on payment treatment and operations because those regulations simply do not apply to non-HIPAA programs. In similar fashion, healthcare providers may be reluctant to share information from clinical research databases. There may be some prohibitions or limitations in sharing information about ongoing clinical research. So that creates some challenges to be addressed. Another issue that we need to be sure that we address is looking at bulk requests or population level requests from public health. Specifically, there are many large health information exchanges that are very interested in accessing data from public health, and that's a wonderful thing. A potential challenge, however, is managing those data requests flow. For example, in Texas, there are at least two HIEs that have population bases of over 6 million people, one at about 7, I believe, and one at about 10.5 million people. If we were to receive queries from those two HIEs on a daily basis for their entire population, it may have a very significant impact on our systems. So we need to make sure that we are working in conjunction with HIEs and providers to balance access to those resources so that providers have access to the data that they need in a timely manner to provide care to the people they're serving next. And that need, that may include providing sufficient enough time and access for a provider to query an IIS so that they can ensure that they've got appropriate vaccine supplies for a patient appointment. But it doesn't necessarily mean doing bulk downloads of data for the entire population on a nightly basis. So we need to balance that, and that really impacts 21st Century Cures Act, specifically in terms of looking at data blocking requirements, because that could create some real challenges on the public health side. That being said, I think there are some good opportunities to use the 21st Century Cures Act's provisions to facilitate exchange of data information blocking, doing things like modifying systems to address some of the challenges with optional data versus required data by amending specification requirements to enable healthcare providers to select on the fly what may be required to be provided in their system if the state has extended the implementation, national implementation guide, to require a field that may be optional in other locations. And that would be an excellent opportunity to leverage the 21st Century Cures Act to enable that and reduce and enable providers to report data efficiently without having to spend excess resources with EHR vendors to implement the needed changes. Please see my written comments for additional content. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Steve. Stephen Lane?
Yeah, trying to address this question specifically, I think that ONC has some real opportunities. You know, we have discussed in various venues the possibility for additional versions of health IT certification beyond the standard EMR certification that we have today. And I think that serious consideration should be given to creating a certification for other health IT systems, such as public health data systems. Similarly, within USCDI, there would be an opportunity to create a public health data class that could both point to established data elements as well as be a home for additional data elements that might be required specific to the public health use cases. I think, you know, less obvious would be the opportunity to consider public health users as actors under the information blocking rule. Again, thinking that, you know, as a provider, it's very valuable for me to be able to get data from public health in addition to simply sending data to public health. And then lastly, I think the idea of looking at HIPAA, either giving covered entity status to some or all public health actors, or defining public health as a specific public health use cases as covered use cases under HIPAA, or conversely, potentially looking at public health as a component of treatment and or healthcare operations, really defining specific use cases as being covered under HIPAA in one of those ways could be very helpful. Thank you.
Thanks, Stephen. I know that we have public comment on the horizon in a couple of minutes, but I would like to ask the task force members, both those on the phone and on Adobe, please raise your hand or let me know if you have comments. Brian, I see your hand is up. Go ahead, please.
I just want to caution us that last recommendation of making public health a covered entity comes with a tremendous expense, and I think the components and requirements that would be made, even a partial coverage, could bankrupt our entire public health system. So I think we need to think carefully about the implications of a suggestion like that.
Thanks, Bryant. Are there task force members on the telephone who have comments? Please just call out.
No additional comments, but definitely would like to emphasize that last point about thinking very carefully about that broad recommendation for the covered entity status. Thank you.
Yes, we will be starting to draft the documents, the draft recommendations for finalization in our next two meetings. And it will be an excellent opportunity to go in and look at the language and be sure that it is what task force members stand behind and feel good about taking forth to the ONC and to our national coordinator. Mike, did you want to take us into public comment?
I sure will. Operator, can you open up the line for public comments?
Yes. If you would like to make a comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your line from the queue. And for participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. We will pause for a brief moment to poll for comments.
Okay, and while we're waiting, I just want to remind everybody we will reconvene next Thursday, July 1st at 10:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Operator, do we have any comments?
There are no comments at this time.
All right, thank you. Carolyn, Janet?
I know some that Brett and Brenda have some discussion for us about next steps, so I will just thank everyone for your vigorous participation today and encourage you to be active in working with the document so that we can truly refine our recommendations to reflect your views. Thanks.
And this is Janet. I'll just echo that. Thanks, Carolyn, for summarizing it so nicely.
And this is Brenda Kinabo with ONC. Thank you all for the great discussion again today. Looking forward to our next steps. Today is the deadline for the final survey questions, so we do ask that you get those to us as soon as possible, as we're looking to incorporate all of your comments by the end of this week. From there, we'll be reaching out to task force members to refine specific recommendations between now and the July 1st meeting. So again, really looking to have all of the recommendations or all of the survey questions in by the end of today so that we can go ahead and incorporate that into the draft recommendations document. Additionally, to help with further refining these recommendations and to give the task force time to really work through these together, we're looking to extend the July 1st and July 8th meetings by a half hour each. So please keep an eye out for an email with additional information on that. And of course, since this is so much to go through, we are also considering the possibility of adding a meeting on Tuesday, July 6th as well. So please, again, keep an eye out for emails with additional information. And Brett, please feel free to add on if there's anything else for our next steps.
Yeah, thanks, Brenda. That was great, and thanks everyone for your great participation. I think we'll also be reaching out via email to tap some of the task force members into smaller groups to have folks kind of work offline and further refine language around these recommendations. I know we're nearing the home stretch here with the July 14th HITAC meeting, a deadline to have everything finalized, and so just looking to find the right mix of activities, whether additional meetings or longer meetings or some offline work by task force members to get things in good shape by then.
This is Carolyn. I don't have any additional comments. Thank you again for your participation, and we look forward to seeing you at the meeting next week and online in the draft document. Mike?
Oh, yep. All right. Thank you, everybody, for joining us, and we'll see you next week. Have a great day.